this episode of the Fisheries Podcast, I talk with Joshua Flowers, a private management biologist in the North Texas, Dallas-Fort Worth area, who proudly served his country in the late 90s. Thank you for joining me. I am Nick Kramer, and this is the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fisheries science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter at FisheriesPod or on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast. Our guest today is Joshua Flowers. Joshua graduated with degrees in fisheries resources and wildlife resources from the University of Idaho in 2008. And recently attended the Veterans Entrepreneurship Program offered by the Riata School of Business at Oklahoma State University. He started his own private pond management business, Twin Oaks Ponds, to facilitate the growing need for adequate management of lakes and ponds and the preservation of our natural and man-made resources. He is also passionate about community involvement and serves as an instructor and board member for the Bass Brigades, a youth leadership camp for teens. Welcome to the podcast, Joshua.
Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it.
This episode will be released on Veterans Day, so I thought it would be a nice gesture to hear from someone who is both a veteran and in the field of fisheries. Josh, you were gracious enough to volunteer, or gracious enough to come on the show after someone else volunteered you. Would you mind talking about your service briefly?
I was a U.S. Navy sailor for 8 years. Did a couple of cruises on the Nimitz carrier with VFA 147. They were an F-18 attack squadron. I got to see a lot of different places and meet a lot of different people, either from Adak, Alaska, all the way out to Juba Ali and down through the ditch, so which most people know that is the Suez Canal. So I've traveled around the world 1.5 times. That is kind of like my story, you know, as far as it goes with them. The military, and I still to this day meet veterans anywhere we talk about our service and trying to help each other out if we can in any way.
Were any of the carriers you're on ever see any combat action?
Well, basically, I was stationed on the USS Nimitz. Did two tours with them while we were there, while we were in the Persian Gulf to watch over Iraq at that time, who was under Saddam Hussein. There was one time there we had to be on station for about 5.5 months because he was wanting to do things. It never escalated anything, but it could have. The other one was when Taiwan and China were having a problem. We went from the Persian Gulf all the way back over to there in a few days. So those were kind of our major experiences when we're on cruise. I never really did. It was like in between Iraqi freedom and then when we went back over there to redo everything, you know, kind of help out finding where Saddam Hussein was and get rid of, you know, some of the new stuff, the terrorists coming through now. So I never really did any major conflicts like over in Afghanistan. More or less was in between periods, but still had, you know, the sense if I needed to, I would have gone back.
From me and the whole podcast audience, we thank you for your service. Thank you for going over there and helping out those fighter jets.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
So then how did you go from the Navy cruising around the Pacific Ocean to the University of Idaho to study fish and wildlife?
Well, I knew in 2002 was about time for me to find a new career, just had a sense. And everybody asked me, goes, well, you put 8 years in, why don't you keep on going? I was like, no, it's time to go ahead and pursue my dream of attaining a college education. I applied to multiple universities looking for degrees in wildlife, and University of Idaho was one of the first ones to call me and talk to me, have me come out, and it just seemed like a really good fit. And with my retraining from the Navy under vocational rehabilitation, it fit perfect. All my courses went through. We got everything situated correctly, and we went on from there. And I had a great time at the College of Natural Resources there at the University of Idaho. I met a lot of people, sitting there with one of the counselors. We were looking through my courses, and we were like, yeah, we got, I'm doing wildlife, but hey, I can pick up this fisheries degree. I was like, well, yeah, I'll do that. I'll add an extra 5 classes on there. So I was taking a full load, and by the time 2008 ended, I had 2 degrees.
That's definitely one way to do it. If the opportunity is there, go ahead and seize it.
That's what I did. I seen the opportunity, and I took it. I mean, and I don't regret doing it, even though at the time it was, I mean, it was full of course load, stress, you know, like, everybody's like, you're crazy. I was like, well, I'd rather be crazy than not.
I don't have your full life story here in front of me, but connecting the dots, I think you went straight from Idaho down to the Texas, Oklahoma area. Was that where you're originally from, or what drew you to that part of the world?
All right. So originally I grew up in Colorado in the Rocky Mountains. Went from there, went to the military, spent my 8 years, got out in Washington State, stayed there for about till 2005, getting some of my transfer credits. And then I went to the University of Idaho. At the University of Idaho, I worked summers for the Forest Service in Idaho and Montana, and then I had got on with the Forest Service in Montana after I graduated. And there was one of my wife's friends asked me, do you know anything about palms? I was like, no, not really, but I'm going to learn. And that's when we moved to Texas, because I had done enough inquiring. I sparked interest in a biologist down here, a private fisheries biologist who had, you know, everybody kind of followed a lot, Bob Lusk. And so the next thing I know is I'm working with him, learning more about palms, and it just kind of kept going from that. And then we had a life happen. You know, my mom had a brain aneurysm, so I went back to Montana to help out, stay with, you know, Idaho Fisheries when I went back up there. About 3 years after that, it was time we needed to come back to Texas. And, well, as I was, it was put to me, have faith, just go out on your own. So I did. And I had a lot of support from people. And I seen that there was a need, that need for people to have a palm management company and a biologist that was trying to help them be better than what they thought they were being as stewards on their, or with their natural resources.
So you moved down there originally to work for Bob Lusk, you mentioned, and you just enjoyed the area so much, you decided to move back and start your own business there.
Pretty much. I like this area in Texas. I really love this North Texas area. It messes with who I am, as you know, an outdoors, horses, cattle. I mean, I like all that aspects. I love the oaks here, and then the sunsets that I get to see. I mean, I love the sunsets when I was on the carrier, but some of these sunsets that I see here out of Texas and different parts of Texas, I just enjoy it. I just love seeing them.
Did you always plan on going the private route? You kind of mentioned that you worked for some state and federal agencies up there in Idaho. Was that kind of your original plan, to get on with a state or federal agency and just be a state biologist for a while, and then the private sector kind of came knocking on your door?
My original plan was to get with the Forest Service and finish out my time in service with them, because I could transfer my military time over to the retirement system of the Forest Service. I said, you know, I was thinking ahead, you know, like a couple steps ahead. And I was working on that. And then, like with anything in the government, especially the federal government, funding is what really determines how many people can be attached to different areas. And eventually mine was getting phased out. So my technician job was going to be phased out, and there really was no replacement. So when we moved down here to Texas, it just opened it up. I mean, the private industry down here, you know, it worked. So that's where I just stayed with it. And I'm kind of building it, you know, in a way that really helps people understand, you know, how we can really manage these resources for the betterment of everybody, not just personal. And it's really working.
So your private pond management business that you started, Twin Oaks Ponds, you currently serve the North Texas, South Oklahoma, and the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And I'm sure you get quite a wide range of jobs with that kind of broad of an area, but what are some of the jobs you regularly take on?
A lot of aquatic vegetation management, invasive, and, you know, augmentation also, kind of planting plants that will help with water quality. You know, we take care of hydrilla or coontail on some places, or just an overabundance of cattails in an area, kind of send them back. So, you know, that's the aquatic side. But then the other side is a lot of ponds that have just been mismanaged, or the person didn't know how to manage them correctly. So we go, you know, I'm going there and assess them, just like State Biologist does with electrofishing. We go in there and assess it, and then help them put a program in place so that they can have something that they can return to their family or to somebody else, pass on like a legacy. So that's really what we're after, you know, and to get kids involved in the outdoors at the same time. So it's a holistic approach that I try and work with. And I have many of my clients really love that way of doing it. It's just not one. I don't look just at, it's just a fishery. The fishery is it. No, we're looking at a whole system. So those are kind of the things I get. You know, like I got a guy right now, we're trying to build something that really looks really nice down there, Grapevine. So it incorporates wildlife, fish, butterflies, natural plants. You know, stuff that makes the whole area beneficial so we can keep up with a riparian area that's near. So those are kind of the things that we do.
What is the range of sizes that you're working on? Are they mostly kind of smaller 5-acre city ponds, or do you get anything up in the double digits, up 50 acres, anything with size to it? Or is it mostly small detention ponds in a city landscape?
Well, I work with urban areas, you know, retention ponds, detention ponds. But I also work with 1-acre farm ponds, 2-acre, up to 22 acres. We got a couple that we got to do some electrofishing on here in the next couple of weeks, you know, since the rain's kind of let up a little bit. So we can get in there and get those assessed and see what kind of plans we're going to do with them. Like one's in East Texas, so we kind of understand what we're going to look at, kind of, you know, what things may come in there because of the water. The watershed out there that near this place. And then the other one, we know that there is catfish in there. So we're trying to look at a catfish population. How do we manage it so we can get a better bass population? Because we have, from history, from the gentleman telling me, is, you know, there's a high catfish population. What do? You know, we can manage it to tip the scale. So that, you know, those are the kind of things I'm looking at doing right now. Something that I don't look for an easy job. I like to have a challenge because, you know, life's a challenge. So why not take on some more challenges?
And is your work a good mix of the water quality improvements and fisheries management? Is it kind of a city, country, urban, rural thing? Or I guess, how does that break out? Is it mostly water quality improvements in town and fisheries improvement outside of town?
Honestly, it's a mix both ways. Some in town with want to have a fishery, which we can do. We can do an urban fisheries management, community fisheries program for like an HOA. Then I've got a gentleman that just wants a nice looking pond. That's it. He doesn't, not worried about the fish. He doesn't want any fish. He just wants a clean looking water. And then I've had guys that just want clean it up, make it look nice, and that's it. You know, maybe add a little bit of fish for the grandkids. That's it. Nothing else. So, I mean, it really does vary. And the way it varies is on the goals that the clients or the people or the community has for that fishery in relation to their overall land.
And are you a one-man crew when you're out doing this, or do you employ seasonal help, or do you usually just get volunteers to help you out with the sampling part of it?
Both. I am of a one-man crew, but when it comes to sampling, I will hire somebody to come along with me, you know, for job, or I have a volunteer that just wants to know. Or like, I've had a couple kids before want to come out with me. This next year, I'm going to open it up for a few more kids to, you know, who want to learn more about fisheries resources or wildlife, you know, management. You know, get them, you know, kind of engaged into our community, into the fisheries community, to the scientific community, because, you know, I look at our next generation is the ones that, you know, we need to be investing in. You know, the more I invest in myself, the more I need to invest in them also. So that's one of the reasons I'm an instructor with Bass Brigades, because I want to promote more of our Arnett's resources, you know, and for making better stewards.
We'll come back to the bass brigades in just a little bit, but first we'll finish up asking about your pond management. At the end of the day, you get home and you're taking your boots off. Do you enjoy the private pond management world?
Yes, I do. I really do. I love the interaction that I and the relationships I build with all of the clients that I meet, the people I meet. It's just not a number or, you know, this area. It's a person and a relationship that I'm building because it's a one-on-one relationship, and it really seems to flourish, you know, the management of the resources on their properties.
As someone that's worked in the federal, state, and the private sectors, what advice would you have to give to students or possibly even professionals that may be looking at going into the private sector, either pond management or there's some private hatcheries? And I guess, what advice do you have for people looking into getting out of the public realm and into the private?
My biggest thing I would say is assess the field and then kind of see what fits. Sometimes what you think fits doesn't always fit who you are. And then there's other times that, you know, the gift horse comes along and you just don't realize it's the gift horse. It looks something ugly, but really it's the beauty. That course is what's going to help you in that private industry.
And you mentioned earlier, but on top of helping people manage their ponds, and you also help out with bass brigades. Tell us a little bit more about this camp and what you do with them.
All right, so we take 13 to 17-year-old young men and young ladies into a camp, 24 of them, split them up into schools. Everything is related to on fish, you know, so they're all, you know, six students per, you know, in four schools or eight students, depending on how big it is. Sometimes, you know, this year we added a few kids into our cadet file of kids. Those kids, or I should say cadets, go through a week-long intense process of learning fisheries management, ecosystem, watershed, water quality. We teach them about different sampling techniques, how to build a pond management plan. And at the same time, we're teaching them leadership skills and how to work with people that they have no idea, they've never met before. Learn how to trust, how to build relationships. And that at the same time, we're getting them introduced to professionals from state, federal, private, or like a vendor to the industry. So we do that. And then we also have Billy Kinder come in and help them understand how to interview. The last few years, Gary Klein's been there to help them learn more about fishing techniques, and, you know, about the professional bass fishing industry, what it takes to be a professional bass fisherman, you know, and he loves kids, so he loves giving back to them and helping them out. We take all that and it builds a great school. I mean, it's intense 5 days, but the kids come out better. I mean, they learn marching, they learn everything, and they have the opportunity to ask us questions. They learn, just like when I was talking about aquatic vegetation, they have plant of the day. The kids love that session. So that's what it is. What we're trying to get, whether or not these kids go into to be fisheries biologists or wildlife biologists or zoology, they may become a lawyer or an accountant, but at least they know something about the outdoors and they understand it. And that's our goal, is they have a knowledge of what it is, what we do out here, and maybe they can, we never know, they may be the next state senator somewhere and they can understand what a scientist says to them, you know, about a fisheries or about a wildlife that's going on.
Now that sounds like a really fun camp to go to. I wish I would have had something like that near where I grew up, but it might have taken half my graduating class to just fill up one of your camps. Is this mostly in larger cities, or is it just in the Dallas area that this is going on?
We do this camp out at the Warren Ranch in Santa Ana, Texas. The stipulation is we have female cadets also. But we pull from all over state of Texas. Right? We've had some kids from Louisiana. We've had some kids from Nebraska. So we're trying to open it up a little bit more and to get more involvement from, you know, kids that really want to come and learn.
And you mentioned it's just one yearly class size of 24 students?
Correct.
Is it usually fill up pretty good, or do you have to turn people away for that camp?
We have had to turn away kids from this camp. We've had a lot of applications. You know, like right now, the applications, I believe, are out for this next year's camp season. So, I mean, but, you know, Bass Brigade is part of Texas Brigade. So, I mean, it's really overall, we're just a subset of Texas Brigade. So, and the whole basis is to get kids involved into conservation. You know, whether it's in a buckskin camp or quail or ranch, you know, that's, or coastal, you know, down there in Galveston. That's our overall goal, is kids in the outdoors, you know. So, but Bass Brigade itself, I mean, we do turn people away, but we also will say, hey, you know, if we know another camp is low on people, we'll say, hey, this is a good candidate. You know, you ought to look at this guy. We kind of help those good kids that didn't get into ours into someone else's. And we always tell that cadet, that potential cadet, please apply again next year to us. You know, we have an ongoing communication with a lot of these cadets.
And how many years have you been helping out with the Texas Brigades and Bass Brigades?
Since 2015.
Have you had any students go on to Field and Fisheries Wildlife, or does anyone else that helped with the camp mention any other students that have gone on to pursue a career?
There's a couple right now that I know of that went to Texas A&M that are. There's one at Texas A&M, I don't know for sure, and there's also one at Oklahoma State right now. But there's there was a gentleman who has been part of the brigades, one of the system. He also come back later as a student helper who now is over at Texas Tech at going to law school. So, I mean, that's where that fit in before, where we said we don't know where they're really going to end up, but at least they have an idea about conservation.
Sounds like a fun camp. You said it was 13 to 17-year-old kids can apply to it?
13 to 17-year-old.
Oh, well, I'm just outside of that, so I guess I can't apply for it.
Well, you never know. You could probably come down as a mentor or as a professional. We always take guests in to help out, you know, somebody different or have a different perspective, you know, to come in and teach maybe a section of something or be there as a, like, we have teachers that come in as adult leaders for the week to interact with these kids and help them go along. So, I mean, there's always some spot. I mean, we are always looking for cooks too.
If anyone listening wants to help out with this program in the future, how would they go about getting a hold of you or the Bass Brigades or Texas Brigades to do that?
Actually, just look online for Texas Brigade. You just type it in your search engine, it'll come up. The other is you can go to my website, email me, and I would answer any questions you have about Bass Brigades. The other one is, you know, Stephen Barton is from Texas Pro Lake Management. He's also the president of Bass Brigades. We'd be more than glad to answer any questions.
Well, Joshua, now the tough part of the interview is over, and we are down to the final five questions. This is a group of five questions I ask each of the guests that come on the show, and we always start real simple with, what is your favorite fish?
My favorite fish? Well, it's bass. I mean, I grew up around trout all my life, and there's just something about bass. That's all I can say.
Being in North Texas around all those big bass waters, I'm assuming you're referring to largemouth bass?
Yes, largemouth bass. I'll clarify that. Yeah, it's largemouth bass. Even though if I was down further south, it'd probably be a peacock bass.
And do you have the Florida strains in your part of Texas, or those more further south?
Actually, we do have those here. They do survive here in the North Texas. So, I mean, there are in quite a few of the ponds.
All right, so this isn't one of the five questions, but what is the biggest bass you've caught down there?
Personally, I've caught a 5-pound bass. Electrofishing, I've caught a 12-pound.
It's not any of the big monsters like you see they pull out of Lake Fork or Lake Falcon down there?
So, I mean, I'm kind of jealous of some of those guys that are like pulling out 9-pound bass all the time, you know, and 10s and 12. But I have to give them kudos. They knew how to pull them out from wherever they were at.
All right, what has been your favorite memory from your career thus far?
My favorite memory, honestly, it didn't have to be when my daughter was helping me stock ponds, and she was like 3, 4. She couldn't get enough of wanting to help dad help one of the clients out. She thought it was an awesome thing to do.
The way you've answered a lot of the questions, I think I have an idea how you're going to answer this next one, but what is your dream job or dream location to work in?
My dream job will always be working with recreational landowners or people who want to better their fish or aquatic resources on their property. And anywhere probably here in Texas would be, you know, really, I guess I'm going to narrow that down. North Texas or the Hill Country of Texas is where I would stay.
All right. If money was not an issue, is there one project that you would like to work on?
And I would love to do habitat optimization on quite a few of the public lakes around here. You know, help out the state biologists, which, you know, we work with quite often on different things. But I think that would be kind of my ultimate goal. Ultimate thing would be not just along with, you know, what I do anyways, because I do that for private people, but help the public out at the same time if I could.
The final one, if there was just one point or principle that you could have programmed into everyone's head, what would it be?
Nature is nature. I mean, no management style fits one leg to the next.
Well, Joshua, thank you for coming on the podcast today. It was a pleasure hearing about you and the work you're doing down there in Texas. And thank you again for your service.
Well, thanks, Nick. I appreciate you asking me to come on here. And it was my pleasure and my honor to serve our country for, you know, for everybody. You know, so like you, you know, people like you to go out and do what you want to do, you know, and not have to worry about that.
Many state and federal agencies will have Monday the 12th off of work in observance of Veterans Day. Will you be taking the day off as well?
Honestly, no, I will not, because I have a gentleman who asked me to come out and survey his lake.
Thank you for doing that. The customer always needs the right of way, I guess.
Well, this is one of those ones that we were trying to do, but because of all the rain, it getting pushed back. So, but I will honor my fallen friends and family, you know, from overseas on Sunday, and I will have something later on that day for Veterans Day.
If people want to find out more information about you or Twin Oaks Ponds or the Bass Brigades, what would be the best way for them to find out all that information?
For Twin Oaks Ponds, you can go to twinoaksponds.com. My email's on there. You can go ahead and email me. My phone number's on there. Or even just on Facebook, just type in Twin Oaks Ponds, Lake Management Consulting. Bass Brigades, I believe it is texasbrigades.org. And all the camps are on there, and Bass Brigades is one of those. You can click on it, and it'll tell you everything about it. If you want to volunteer to come out there, there's information on there, or you want to be a cadet, the packets are there. But that's the best way to do it.
And if you would like to get a hold of me, you can find me on Twitter at FisheriesPod, on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast, or old-fashioned email, feedback@thefisheriespodcast.com. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Listen in next week when I'll talk to Jesse Trzynski, president of the American Fisheries Society and director of animal health and welfare for Evoqua Farms. You can download and subscribe on your favorite listening app or stream it from Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com. I am Nick Kramer, and thank you for listening to the 12th episode of the Fisheries Podcast. And remember, no two ponds are alike.